Maybe we should do intros?
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay.
So you're... No, just kidding.
I'm Sarah Downey. I'm Link today, as you can see. I love video games, so I'm just taking every opportunity to cosplay while I'm here. I'm an attorney, and I work for an online privacy company called Abine, and we try to make privacy tools that are easy for people to use, because as you might be aware, privacy is pretty tough to come by these days. And we have a product there where we go on a long list of data brokers, these people search sites that basically we're going to talk a lot about today that take you and sell you. So like religious views, political views, estimated net worth, all of this kind of like stalker enabling creepy stuff. And I designed a product where we go down a list of those and we do the opt-out for you, which can be really helpful. I've also filed FTC complaints and gotten investigations going against some of the really sketchy, bad acting sites like that, and continue to do advocacy to put them in the limelight, because they thrive on being sort of under the radar, which I don't think is fair. So, yeah.
And I'm Randall Schwartz. This is my 12th year here at Dragon Con, and I'm on this panel not because I'm anywhere near an expert as you apparently are, but because I thought it'd be a great panel to be on. So here I am. Yeah. I'm just a guy on the internet, so you know.
And I should say too, although we have a lot of slides and things to get through, by no means is that set in stone. So if you have questions, please just throw them out there. It'll be more interesting, I think, for all of us if that happens.
Yeah, and be sure to get a mic, because this is being recorded. And if you just shout it out, it probably won't get picked up on this mic, and then people at home would be going, "What the heck was he asking?"
Yeah. All right. So.
Or he or she. Sorry, got to be correct there.
So, you are for sale. Plain and simple. Your data is worth a lot of money, and a ton of people and companies are out there trying to get it. Even right now, if you have a cell phone, it's like having a GPS tracker on you that's broadcasting a ton of info about you. Not just where it is, but also at the chip level, like what apps are you using, and where have you been, and who do you call most often, and all of those things tell a very detailed story about who you are. This image actually is from a New York Times article this morning. There was a huge piece about data brokers today, and I'll explain more about that later, because, I mean, it was crazy. I woke up and I'm like, I'm talking about this thing today. So I'll explain what happened there. But this is an overlay of a person, and I added some information around the outside. This is just a tiny piece of the information that data brokers have about you. So everything from salary to whether you're a gambler to sexual orientation, contact info, it's all there. And you used to have sort of this antiquated view of public records, where public records were things kept by the government in regulated storage, like driver's license info and mortgage info. And what's happened now with the internet, which has changed a lot of things, obviously, your old public records are now everywhere online. And these sites, these data brokers, people search websites, can aggregate them. And it's actually a big business for a lot of states to sell your records. So these sites go and just pull them out. And because they're, quote, public records under the law, these sites can go and access them. They have free speech rights to get this stuff and pull it into one place. But as you'll see, many of these sites do almost no oversight to make sure that the info they're putting out about you is actually accurate or up to date, which could be good if you don't want people to find you. But it could be bad because employers look at this, even though they're not supposed to in many cases. Potential dates look at this. So what you have are these companies that are essentially marketing companies that are using this old public records law as a crutch to aggregate and sell these really detailed profiles about you and take almost no responsibility for what they put up there. And just to give you an example, have you heard of a site called Spokio?
Yeah.
It's really high ranking, so if you Google yourself, it's one of the highest things that comes up, and it's very creepy and shows a lot of stuff about you. And this is for my mom. I blacked out some stuff, but it shows my mom and my dad and family lifestyle. That it shows that my mom owns pets, is self-driven, She contributes to causes. She buys from the internet. She enjoys jogging. That's not true.
Well, 4 out of 5 isn't bad, though.
And then all this other basic information. I believe this is about my dad now, because we're talking male. You know, they have age, relationship, religion. And there's my mom again. It shows me as a relative. And this is stuff you can see for free without even getting a membership. So that's just to show you sort of the state that we're in right now. Oh, I love your tinfoil hat. You are at the perfect panel. Sorry. one of the biggest questions is, how do these sites get this stuff? And there's two main areas. One is things that are involuntarily out there, things that you have no control over putting out in the world if you exist on the grid at all. So things like driver's licenses, birth certificates, marriage certificates, divorces, if you get a house, mortgage information, registering to vote, all of these things that you do to be a part of an involved society, when you're trying to play by the rules, put you on the map in a way that you might not have intended. Because it's not just governments who get this stuff, it's, as I said before, marketers. So it's big business to sell this. And they also get it through things that you voluntarily put out there, but that you might not have known add to this database. And this is probably even a bigger source of data. So loyalty programs, supermarket rewards cards, social networks, sweepstakes, surveys, any of these things that you fill out your data and you don't read the fine print, because I think there's an interesting study that came out and said it would be like an entire week's worth of work if we read every privacy policy that we came across. So these sites that you voluntarily give your data to will turn around and sell it to these big data collectors. And many of these are social networks, so I put this slide up just to remind you that the top is cut off, but it says what tech execs are saying about your privacy. And they aren't saying nice things. You are the product if you're on a free site. You're paying with your data. So you might get things that you enjoy. I mean, certainly Facebook has a lot to offer us, but it also is all about getting, selling, mining your data. So a couple of key quotes. That's actually Mark Zuckerberg's sister in the bottom right, who used to be the former marketing director of Facebook, saying, "I think anonymity on the internet has to go away." And Mark also, this isn't up there, but he once said that having multiple identities online shows a lack of integrity, which I completely disagree with, because are you like the same person around your grandma as you are around your spouse, as you are around your employer? I mean, you are different people at different times, and that's what makes you interesting and human and complex. And these marketers and data brokers and social networks too, are all pushing for you to use your real name and be the same person everywhere. Because it makes money for them to know what you are into, what you like, where you're going, so they can target you with advertisements. So, uses and misuses. They're all over the map. Like, as I just mentioned, a lot of the uses here of your data are for advertising. So, how many of you have noticed if you're on the internet, you Google something, and then you start seeing ads for that thing following you around? Yes. Lots of you. Okay. So that's probably the most obvious example of how your data is being used, but that's just the tip of the iceberg. Because in order to see those ads that are targeted to you, they need to know a whole lot about you to get to that point. And that data that's sitting there about you in these huge detailed dossiers is used for a lot of other more insidious and perhaps scary purposes, such as price discrimination, which means that, let's say, I really like Legend of Zelda and Randall really likes Pearl. If we go online and we both search for those same things, I might see higher prices for Legend of Zelda stuff because marketers know that I am willing to pay more for that because it means more to me.
There was also a case of that recently that an airline company had changed their policy so that if you were logged in as one of their loyal customers, you paid a higher price than the people that were just shopping around that weren't one of their loyal customers. And of course, that raised a pretty big stink. And they said, oh, no, it was just because we hadn't quite fixed the website yet. And that was a, yeah, backpedal, backpedal, backpedal. Right.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And even worse, denial of insurance coverage or more expensive coverage. That's happening more and more now, especially you've probably seen some of these opt-in examples where companies like Allstate, for example, want to outfit you with a tracker in your car that knows everything that you do. And I should specify, you opt into this. It's not like they're just putting this in your car and you don't know about it, but I hope.
Not yet.
It would not surprise me if that did happen. But they put it in your car and it measures how fast you're going, are you speeding, how often you use the brakes, and how hard you're slamming on the brakes. It's like a Big Brother chip for your car. But if you're a good driver, you get better rates, in theory.
And similarly, there are some companies, car companies, that are alleged to be having in their computer inside the car to see if you ever exceed a certain speed limit, and that voids like some part of your warranty, which is sort of weird. And it's like, oh, that's just too much data tracking.
Oh, yeah. Oh, definitely. Also, something that's, of course, a big deal right now in this economy, and it's always a big deal, are lost job opportunities. So the amount of data that's collected about you and used and stored, it's not just hidden in these marketing databases. It's also actively sold in these profiles to people who are interested in hiring you. For example, the company Spokio I just mentioned was fined $800,000 by the FTC because they're not allowed to target people hiring with this information, yet they were going out and they had huge ad campaigns just for that thing. So they're selling this like non-verified kind of mixed up data from all these different places, and people are getting denied jobs based on this. There was a case, actually, I'm from Boston, there was a case in one town over from me in Cambridge where this woman named Kathleen Casey applied for a job. She was overqualified for it, and she didn't get it. And she asked them why, and employers don't have to tell you why, but they chose to. And they said, well, you know, we looked you up on one of these data broker sites, and it turned out that you had 14 felony convictions for fraud. And she was like, what? I have no convictions. And like, whoops, the data broker mixed her up for a different person with a slightly similar name. And like, the only reason she knows is because the employer happened to tell her. So this happens on a large, large scale. And you might not even know that this is happening to you. There's a company called Social Intelligence that just mines your social networking data. Even if you delete stuff, right? It goes back 7 years. So like 7 years ago, I might have posted like a keg stand photo. Like I probably did post a keg stand photo. And I might have woken up the next morning and decided that was not a great idea and deleted it. And Social Intelligence has that. And they have analyses of all the words that I've used. Have I used racial epithets? Like it doesn't know if I'm joking, you know? It doesn't know if I'm quoting somebody else. All it knows is that that word showed up in something I posted, and they're going to give a readout to potential employers. So one of the drawbacks of that is that if you know how often you're being tracked and monitored, you kind of don't say the same stuff. You watch what you're saying. You know, you type something into the Facebook share box, and then you think twice and delete it. And these things that are supposed to be vehicles for self-expression and sharing are turning out to be sort of we're censoring ourselves a little bit more. People are thinking twice about what they put up and what they tag, and so some of that is certainly good. But ultimately, speech matters, and these companies, as private companies, can censor whatever they want. But we're censoring ourselves on them voluntarily.
Well, some people are.
Yeah. Some.
There's a generational gap in this I've seen already, in that I might censor myself a little bit more, but the kids that grew up with social media have an entirely different way of approaching it, and this is scary for people who are in the know about stuff like this.
Yeah, oversharing.
Yes.
It is very real. And then there are, you know, stalking and harassment, obviously huge, huge issues associated with these things. I've heard from a ton of people who are victims or survivors of domestic abuse, for example, or stalking, who, you know, they might even be in witness protection, some of them, and these sites don't care. They don't know that. They just publish this stuff. They pull it and put it up, and it can quite literally lead the abuser that you've been trying to avoid to your front door, which obviously is not a good thing. And as well as cyberbullying, too. It has not only your home address, but these sites have your digital information, your email address, your phone number, cell phone number. So if somebody wants to find you in this day and age, it is super easy for them to do that, thanks to these sites. So one of the biggest issues with data brokers is that there's this melding of what you do online with what you do offline. So Starbuck on the left is your real life persona, and then Caprica 6 on the right is your digital persona. So, you know, let's say you're doing stuff on Facebook, you put out your email and your phone number because they pester you for that, like there's no tomorrow. I mean, they did it to me today, and I'm a holdout. I don't even update the app because the permissions scare me so much. But let's say you put out your email and phone number on Facebook. Then you go to a brick and mortar store where you're going to buy a shirt. And how many of you have been at checkout in real life and the person bothers you for an email or phone number?
Yes.
Okay. And that's like pretty recent, right? In the last couple of years.
Not at Radio Shack.
Yeah.
It's been around there for like 20 years.
Yeah. Well, you can tell that there's this push. Like there's this feeling in the air that they really, really want your data. And although they'll tell you that it's for coupons or it's for to email your receipt or it's for you, it's not for us, the benefit is for you. The benefit is all on them and their data partners, because if they have your email and your phone, that is the link between the offline you and the online you. That is the link that lets them connect whether you saw an ad on Facebook and then went into the store in real life and bought that thing. So Facebook, for example, has a number of these big data partners, including Datalogix and Axiom. Axiom has information on 96% of Americans, an average of 1,500 data points about things that I showed you on the first slide, you know, political views, marital status, estimated net worth. And these companies work directly with Facebook, trafficking and selling your data. They do it all the time. In fact, Facebook just got an update to its terms of use on Friday that allows them to do this even more freely. And there's a very real marketplace for your data that's happening all around you all the time, offline and online, and it's sort of shrinking the private and public distinction.
This also includes things like, I don't know if you're going to come to this, but also like affinity programs. So like if you have like a Target card or something like that, or a Safeway card, where, you know, so where you go into the same store all the time, that's another way for them to track you and also figure out what things to ship you in terms of coupons to get you back in the store.
Mm-hmm. And there's even a high amount of tracking happening within the stores now because of cell phones and also because of facial recognition, which I'll get to in a bit. But if you're walking around certain stores, Home Depot is one of them, your phone is a GPS tracker. It's always broadcasting where you are, not only on a broad scale, but also where you are within Home Depot, so which aisles you're in, how long you're looking at different displays. And now there are little cameras in many cases in the shelves that can detect a face and determine what gender you are, roughly how old you are, how long you're looking at that particular shelf to gauge what kinds of things would appeal to you. So this slide is intentionally confusing, and what it's supposed to show is that opting out of these sites is really hard. Opting out means that you go to the site and you fill out a little form or an email, or you call them. They all have different processes, but you tell them essentially, hey, I don't want you to sell this stuff. And they will say, okay, in theory, although this doesn't happen and that's why I filed FTC complaints against them, but they'll say, okay, we'll take it down for some period of time. But you have to go and repeat this for every single site. So Intellius, iSearch, PeopleLookup, ZobaSearch, all those, they're all owned by the same parent company, but they won't tell you that. So they want you to go to each separate site. One of them is requires a fax, one requires a phone number, one requires snail mail, and it takes a significant amount of time to do this for each of these different sites, right? And I mean, there are literally over 200 of these, and that number is growing every day. So, and then they'll change their process just when you have it figured out. They'll change it. And even if you got it taken down, they'll put it up 2 weeks later. So it's really like a game of whack-a-mole that you essentially can't win. And it's something, it's a real problem, you know, and it's getting worse. And the FTC, some of the commissioners are pushing for stricter controls around this. But really what it comes down to is public record laws make it legal. It's completely legal for these sites to do this. And until that changes, this is going to keep going on. So here's actually a resource for you. On our website, abine.com, we made a list of a lot of these, and we'll show you for free how to remove yourself. So if you are so inclined to go through the horrible process of taking these things down, we have instructions. We also have a service that does it for you, but you have to pay us, so trade-offs. $129 a year. Reason why is because we have a team of law students basically in-house who are cranking out letters and phone calls and faxes for you, which is, as you can imagine, a huge pain in the ass. So, and they do it every quarter. So every 3 months they go through the entire list and have a dashboard where they show you, here's where you are, here's where you're listed, here's what's coming up, and have to keep resubmitting and resubmitting. And it's like, what's that Greek myth where the guy's pushing the boulder up Sisyphus. The hill? It is a Sisyphusian task to do this.
That's probably the first time that word's been said in this room.
Impressive.
Oh, maybe not. Okay. I haven't been here the whole time. I'm sorry.
Yes.
Could you give that website again?
Sure. It's abine.com/optouts.php. Yes. So, we mentioned this a little bit earlier, but facial recognition is sort of the thing that ties all of this together. And why that is because, well, first of all, let me step back. You all have fingerprints. Fingerprints identify you uniquely. The same is true for your face. So, the spacing of your eyes, where your nose is on your face, those things create a face print for you, which is unique. So just like your phone has a unique identifier, your face is sort of the identifier for you in the real world. And there are apps that exist today that can scan your face just through a photo and cross-reference that photo and face print against what's out there in the world on Google image search, on dating profiles, on any picture you put out there, and come up with a really good guess as to who you are. And once your name is revealed, as we know through these public record sites, these data broker sites, you can get a whole lot more information. And there was a really interesting Carnegie Mellon study where they demonstrated that I could go from a cell phone picture of you right now in this con to getting your name and address to getting your social security number in, you know, 30% of cases, it ended up at social security number. Yep.
And I'm in college. Oftentimes, people that try to do one-night stands, never happens. Just girl takes a picture, look, finds them on Facebook, and they're immediately stopping
them. That really happened? Did you guys hear that?
No. So he
was saying that he's in college, and that this facial recognition has kind of, like, killed the one-night stand, because the person will take a picture of the hookup and then be able to identify them through the magic of the internet and insist on second and third nightstands and so on. Yes, that is totally creepy, actually. It's also used on dating sites too, because, like, do you guys know the show Catfish, like on MTV? Or it's also a documentary. They use reverse image searches and facial recognition a lot to determine if someone is lying. So this is a show, for those of you who don't know, where somebody will be dating somebody else online, and person A doesn't know if person B is actually who they're claiming to be, usually because they're really hot and they've only spoken on the phone. Because, yeah, by the way, if somebody won't video chat with you, it's a good sign that they're not who they say they are, just at least from that show. So they'll oftentimes use facial recognition to go search for this person based on their dating profile site and find out that they're completely not who they said they were, that it was stolen or that it came from a porn site or it was ripped off from who knows where. So facial recognition is very real, and it's happening everywhere, from airports to stadiums to on the street. There are facial recognition cameras being installed all around Central Park in New York right now. And the justification is always, well, we're going to stop terrorists, so it's good. And of course, what?
The Patriot Act.
Yeah, Patriot Act has been shitty for privacy. Let's just say that. Yep. Yeah. Well, it could be real life, like a smartphone. I could just do it right now. Or it could be, let's say I find you and we're friends on Facebook. And I can just take that photo that you put up as your profile photo. And you can run facial recognition that way. Or you can do a reverse image search like this. So this is one that I did on a photo of myself. And all you do to do a reverse image search is go to Google. And instead of typing in text, you see that little camera icon at the top right next to the blue search button?
Yeah.
You just click that and you upload a photo that you want to search. And you're not actually uploading it to Google. That would not be good for privacy. But you're just using it to run the search. And then it will look for any similar images. So as you can see at the bottom, it says visually similar images. And it found one that was a crop. So it's pretty smart. You know, it won't get just the same image. It'll get the same image in various.
Actually, technically, you are uploading it to Google because they do the recognition server side. So they might be keeping all these.
Well, shit. So I take back everything I've said.
Hopefully, you weren't searching for your own
news. I'm not gonna go there.
Make sure you're logged out.
Yeah.
Takes a picture of someone intentionally getting you in the background can potentially upload that photo and find out everything about you, and you have no idea that you had your picture taken.
Yes. And that's going to happen more and more. I mean, it's already being used in law enforcement. They'll take extremely high-def pictures of crowds at protests and things, and they'll crowdsource it and say, hey, Internet, everybody, we need your help. Go look through these pictures and see who you can identify. Like, that happened in was it Seattle? It was a protest about legalizing marijuana, and the police crowdsourced identification of the people at that protest. So that's like a low-fi facial recognition because a person would have to do it, but algorithms are much, much stronger, and they can detect and analyze faces depending on, you know, even in different lighting, with different facial hair, with sunglasses. But, you know, aside from wearing a mask, there are some things that you can do. Like, there's interesting makeup that you can wear, which looks very cyberpunk, so it has that bonus as well. But a more reasonable solution is that you should always use different profile pictures for different areas of your life, or don't show your face at all. Like, do the mysterious shadow shot or the, you know, your leg looking hot or some other disembodied thing. Because think about it, if I use that image on OkCupid and then I also use it on LinkedIn, anybody doing an image search for that would come up with those two things and immediately be able to link all that together. That's why facial recognition has such a huge will have such a huge impact on privacy, because it's going to take all these separate aspects of your life and put them in one place. And you're not going to have control over that like you do today. Like, you know, we're all here at Dragon Con because we're nerding out and we're escaping from the real world a little bit. And somebody could take a picture of you here and somebody could realize where you work. And suddenly you don't have any control or power over that. And that's not the kind of world that I want to live in personally.
You'd rather live in a DragonCon world?
Oh, yes.
There we go. Right on.
Yeah. I don't want to go home for this weekend. So there are some tips here. I don't want you guys to feel like 1984 is coming and there's nothing you can do about it. Well, it is coming, but hopefully there are things that you can do about it. So the first and probably biggest thing is to just be vigilant about your data. So just start thinking about your data for as having the value that it has. You know, marketers already recognize this. Facebook already recognizes this. People need to recognize this. Tinfoil hat recognizes this, right? Yeah. So when you're at checkout, when you're on Facebook, you know, start thinking about your info as yours and don't give it out unless you absolutely have to. Like, just be that guy who is at checkout and just says no repeatedly. Like, I do it all the time. It's fine. It's a little bit awkward at first. You get used to it. You know, sometimes you educate them and they'll say, really, it's for coupons. And you say, no, it's going to be sold to hundreds of different data brokers and I might not get a job because of that. And they're like, well,
I've actually been doing that in doctor's offices that are asking for my driver's license. And it's very, very difficult. I was wondering, is that the wrong area that I'm focusing? I should really be more focusing on this area over here.
I mean, they're all interconnected, so, I mean, there's actually a little bit more protection for health information, but, yeah, I would advise you to do it everywhere that you can. Do you get away with it? Do they ultimately...
If I just say I'm not comfortable with that, most of the people will back off, but some of them won't, and they say that, you know, we can't treat you here. But I can't, and I called my insurance company, and they said it's not required that you give them your driver's license. They're saying, well, we have to prove it for insurance benefits, but that's not actually required. I think it does come from the Patriot Act that they've started to do it.
Hmm. Do you know anything about that?
No.
I don't know the specific...
We got to verify
that. Yeah. So... But you must submit your claim. We got to verify who you are. If you say, I'm Jane Doe, but your claim is not signed.
They want to copy it.
Oh. Yeah. Yeah. If you can get away with it, do it. But it's more protected. Yes.
I have a question.
Hey.
Back to social media, due to the nature of, you know, their model, you know, they're closed sites. You know, you have to belong to Facebook in order to interact with everyone there. So you develop a monopoly, which is why they can get away with doing things like taking your information and selling it to third parties. Or, you know, they can get away with a lot of things and we can't do anything about it. Has anyone tried developing, as opposed to, you know, sites, has anyone tried developing a social media protocol so that, you know, there's actually, you know, the protocol itself so people can choose who they use to...
Yeah, diaspora. There's some people that are building open source equivalents to a lot of the social sites. The problem will be, though, that, you know, I may be happy going there because I know about it, but my buddies on Facebook don't know to come back over there. And so at some point, I'm going to have to, you know, reveal something to Facebook and try to get people moved over, and they're not going to want to do that because their friends are still on Facebook.
Yeah, I think you're right that, like, Facebook's power in many cases is because everybody's there. It's like Facebook's like the party that you sort of don't want to go to because it's lame, but you know everybody's going to be there, and that's until that changes, it's that's the party where everyone's at.
It's already happening though. Like, younger people are not using Facebook anymore. Like the way Nutella. How LimeWire became the protocol for that, and everybody started using that, but nobody knew how to use, you know, Gnutella or BitTorrent. You know, everybody uses uTorrent, but because that became accessible, but before that, they didn't know how to use, you know, torrents. Maybe if somebody came up with an easy-to-use client for that protocol, you know, it'd become more usable. Hmm. I don't know. Anyway, that's all I had to say.
Well, there's no APIs. There's no APIs in Facebook that would allow you to be able to get to it, though. So. There's a few APIs for doing searches and things like that on Facebook, but there's nothing to be able to sort of post automatically to the depth that you can by actually being online in Facebook. So yeah, it's really difficult to just build something that sits in front of Facebook and does whatever you want to do.
I think that would actually violate their terms.
Yeah.
Because they really don't want you to mess with their stuff.
Oh, I'm not even talking about integrating with Facebook. I'm talking about something separate from Facebook. So what did you say this one was called?
Diaspora. Yeah.
With an A at the end?
That's
yeah.
Cool.
That's more of a, I think that's more of a Twitter clone, though, not a Facebook clone, as I recall.
There was one that attempted to come out called, what was it? It was like Unthink or something. It didn't do well, but it was supposed to be like a more private version of Facebook where you could import or, and export your contacts, but it didn't do very well.
Can I comment real quick?
Sure.
In the medical field, in some cases, I work in the medical field. I do ask for identification for many cases. If the patient refuses to give it, we mark the chart, which restricts us from giving narcotics. And the reason being is if we give narcotics to a patient who uses a false identity, that patient goes into a database, and it can affect what medications they can be given. So it's usually for the patient's protection. So that's actually a growing crime of people stealing an identity, going to that doctor's office and trying to get narcotics. So a lot of it is based on we want to protect ourselves, but we also want to protect the patient. One thing that I do want to say about health information, be very careful when you guys sign up for wellness programs that are not related to your doctor's office, things at work, you know, where they're like, hey, sign up for this, you get a free gym membership, because all that information that you load up, if you know how fat you are, what your cholesterol is, you know, that's not protected. What's protected in my record, that's very strict laws on what's protected in the doctor's office. But what you give your employer, what you give up when you do a CVS card with all those medications that are on that CVS card, that's not protected. And chances are you may be getting advertisements for Paxil. They didn't get it from their doctor's office. They got it from everywhere else. So be very, very careful, especially with your health information, because if it's anywhere that's not a doctor's office, there ain't no protection.
That's a really good point. Somebody else have a question? I thought,
I mean, I think one of the pieces that I found very interesting 2 weeks ago was with Google when they responded to their privacy policy saying that as consumers, we should have no expectation of privacy because you sign up saying, I want you to mine all my emails and target me with things. And I mean, thinking back, you know, 10, 15 years ago, we used to have to pay for email. There wasn't something free. And as consumers, we've driven towards this behavior because we've said, we'll take things for free in exchange for giving away our privacy. And you know, it's just something I think we need to be aware of. We're almost doing this to ourselves, too.
You're 100% right, definitely. Privacy used to be something that we expected to have by default, and maybe we took for granted a little bit. And now it's something that if you want to get it, you really have to work hard for it and almost certainly pay for it. And this model, the prevailing model that most of these big tech companies have today, which is, you know, hey, come on in, it's free, import your contacts, like share everything, that it benefits them and not you in the sense that you're the product being sold. Your data is what's powering this vehicle. And you know, like let's say Facebook offered a paid version for maybe like $10 a month that wouldn't track you, wouldn't sell your data. You know, even if a very small percentage of people did that, it would be millions and millions of dollars for them. I mean, my feeling is that they should just offer people the choice. You know, right now nobody has a choice. And it goes even beyond that, like the Facebook buttons and Google Plus buttons and things that you see across the web, those are trackers. Even if you don't click on them, there's JavaScript behind them that knows what you're doing on the site, whether you click things, how long you've been there. It's all going back to Facebook. So this tracking doesn't happen just on Facebook when you choose to share things. It happens anytime you go to a site that has these widgets embedded, which is almost, you know, pretty much every site that you go to these days. And that's not to mention Facebook Connect and logins that get even more data than that. So yeah, it's a problem. It's something that we have to work for, and the business model sucks right now for privacy. Did you have a question?
Now, I just wondered if you could speak to the ability to correlate, and you can essentially identify, I mean, working with big data companies, you can identify an individual just by what they buy and their zip code. So
yeah.
Even if they're paying with cash and they ask you at the register, what zip code? What's your residence code?
That was outlawed in Massachusetts and California, I believe, because you're absolutely right that those two pieces of data can identify you with alarming accuracy. And a lot of people, a lot of retailers were demanding that at checkout, and consumers were saying, no, I don't want to give that. So now at least in those two states, you don't have to. And my feeling is you should just say no anyway.
Or give them a false zip code. Who cares?
Yeah. Give them all sixes. Just for the mark of the beast.
Verify credit cards and gas stations with
your zip code. Yeah. And if that doesn't count, should it count? Is there any push for federal legislation, a HIPAA Act extended beyond the scope of simple health information?
Whenever the FTC writes up a big report on privacy, they usually make recommendations, or they want the industries to regulate themselves. But the thing they come down strongest on is data brokers, and they say they really want Congress to pass a law that regulates these companies. That at least, like, so if they're going to sell it, they have to make sure at least it's accurate. But that hasn't happened yet. But actually, today the company Axiom that I mentioned, that has data on 96% of you, 1,500 data points, they announced today through the New York Times that on the 4th, September 4th, they're going to be publishing for the first time ever a list of data that they have about you. Of course, it's not all the data they have about you, but they're trying to kind of be the good guy and tell you this stuff before Congress comes and jumps on them and regulates them. So come September 4th, you'll be able to see a lot more than you ever were able to see. It's aboutthedata.com. So we'll see if that actually tells you about the data, or if it's just sort of like, we'll tell you what we want to tell you and keep out the sensitive stuff.
With the move to mobile wallets, and you know, you're suddenly taking all of your credit card payments, your loyalty information, everything there in one place. Do you think that privacy is going to change? Is it going to get worse? Like, what do you foresee with that?
Yeah, payments are a big deal. I know that PayPal, for example, will categorize you into different types of profiles based on how much money you spend and where you spend it. Like, if you're a big spender on PayPal, I think you're like platinum status. Like, this isn't something that you can see. It's something that they will sell. So, you know, you'll see different types of ads based on the fact that you spend more money at different places. The credit card companies, Visa, MasterCard, Amex, they're all collecting where you spend your money and selling that as well. So anytime that you check out at a place, there's a code that associates with the type of business. So, like, porn has a code and medical has a code. And so if they can see that you're spending a lot of money at these types of businesses, and that's all part of this marketing profile about you. So yes, I mean, there's a ton of innovation happening right now around payment and tracking, and right.
And as the capabilities get bigger and bigger for, you know, computer processing, you know, so we don't have to wait for Moore's law, because we can scale horizontally now as well as vertically, so we can put more and more machines together to cooperate and do big data mining. Essentially, you know, how Google can find a result when you type in a search term is done not by having one really, really powerful machine that you're talking to right now. It's millions of machines horizontally, and that technology is open source, and other companies are using and adopting it, and it's just going to get worse before it gets better, and it may never get better.
So does that tagging that you're talking about affect my credit score? If I go buy porn, alcohol, and guns, is that going to impact my credit score or my insurability?
I've seen evidence of that happening. I don't think it happens in every case, but more and more it is happening. And there are a crop of companies coming up right now that are based just on this thing, this premise about data affecting your credit score, what you do online affecting your credit score. So, for example, if you're friends with somebody and they are late or they've defaulted on a loan, that will reflect poorly on your credit score, because the algorithms that these companies use think that you're not as trustworthy because the people that you keep company with, at least on Facebook, are not trustworthy. Even things like they monitor the way you fill out a loan application online. If you type in all caps, you get docked points for that. If you don't use proper spelling, you get docked points. If you go through too quickly so that you couldn't possibly have read the fine print, you get docked points. They look at, they'll import your PayPal and eBay data. And this happens in more traditional ways too. Like there was a guy, for example, on his honeymoon who was shopping at Walmart, and he got a notification from his bank that his credit limit had been dropped from like 14,000 to 4,000. And when he asked them why, they said, well, people who tend to shop at Walmart tend to have lower credit scores and limits. So we dropped yours. So it's an example of like aggregate data being used to make decisions about you, the individual, decisions that are not good for you.
Is there anything technical you can do? Can you turn off JavaScript, turn off cookies, shop incognito, turn off plugins?
You really just have to go entirely off the grid.
Or do I just need the tinfoil hat?
Well, yeah. you need the hat, number one. Number two, there are tracker blockers that you can use. Like my company makes one called Do Not Track Me, but which is free. There are also others like Disconnect out there. So that blocks the passive web tracking at the code level. But it does not block all things, because these things are evolving very, very quickly. And it still doesn't touch upon what happens when you give out your data online, like your email, you know. So you can either create aliases yourself, lie about your birthday, for example. We actually made a tool recently, we just launched this, called Mask Me, that does this for you. So it lets you like click into forms and give out either your real email or a masked alias. Same with credit card numbers. So your real card will get charged, but the merchant never sees it. So those category codes never apply for where you're shopping. And same with phone number.
Does everybody know about plus addresses on Gmail? You can give a different, entirely different address. That's a start with your main address, but you can put plus anything else you want after that and make it unique for each place you visit.
So like sarahplusporn@gmail.com, and it would be like, I know where I gave that one out.
Yes.
Right. Yeah.
If you're buying porn, you're doing it wrong.
Yeah, that's true.
So let's say I've messed up.
What's this?
Let's say I've...
Are you Daenerys, by the way?
I am.
Awesome.
I am.
Mother of dragons.
Yeah, I have them right here. So let's say I've messed up and I've used my LinkedIn profile for my Facebook profile, for my Match.com, whatever, right?
Yeah.
So deleting that obviously doesn't delete it. Like, how would I go about fixing a mistake I've made?
Well, that is the million-dollar question.
Jump into the TARDIS. Go back a few hundred
years. How do you delete stuff from the internet? What is going on here?
I don't know.
Okay. Sorry. Do you want to take this while I... I don't know. I'm just trying to show this. I don't know why. Okay. Whatever. So how do you fix it? Well, deleting it does help in some cases. So even though, let's say, the site will still have it in its reserves, it might not be indexed anymore on Google, which is really the most important thing for discoverability. So, I mean, getting something removed always starts with the site itself. You know, like if you want to get it taken down, you have to go to that site, you have to go to the webmaster, whoever it is, and ask for it to be taken down. And once it is, Google will eventually stop showing it in results. Or you can push them to do it quicker with, it's called the URL removal tool. You can just be like, hey, Google, this doesn't exist anymore. Take it down.
Keep in mind that anything you've had on the internet, if it's been crawled by the Internet Archive, which is the Wayback Machine, I've gone back, you know, 10, 15 years to my websites and seen how it actually hasn't changed at all because I'm a really bad webmaster. but all that stuff is there if it's been crawled. Now, they don't crawl as often as Google does. Google probably comes through every few days or so at least. But, you know, if they were coming by like about once every 2 months to my site and grabbing a particular snapshot of what it looked like at that point.
For alias data, is it like Facebook asks you for your real... email address and your real date of birth.
Don't ever give them the real stuff.
Okay.
Don't.
Too late.
Is that illegal, or is Facebook going to kick you off? Or
well,
how do they even know if you give them the right or wrong
data? It's totally legal for you to do it, but it is in violation of their terms. Their terms require you to use to not only give your legal, accurate information, but to keep it updated, which is absurd. You know, like if you were a victim of domestic violence, for example, like why the hell would you give Facebook your real data? I mean, that's a danger to you. And they're really pushing for that with their real names policy. So my advice would be to use a fake birthday, but the same fake birthday. Like, I always do the first of the month in the year with my actual of my actual birthday, just so I can remember it if, in case I need to, like, get back into the count with verification. But I use a fake phone number. I use an alias email that forwards to my real email. And by doing that, too, you're severing that connection between the offline world and the online world. So, like, if you're at checkout and they ask for your email and you give them your real one that you know by memory because it's true, that's not the one that's on Facebook. So they can no longer make that connection between what you're doing offline and what you're doing online. So, yes, lie to Facebook. It doesn't matter. Everything is a violation of every term of use. It doesn't matter. I would highly suggest you lie to them. Yeah. What? Exactly. Yeah. And they won't, you know, they very rarely will kick you off for a fake name. As long as you choose one that doesn't look totally obviously fake with, like, letters and numbers and symbols and stuff. A lot of college kids will do their first name and then their middle name, for example. It looks real.
And I believe, although it may be different now, but back when I was young, you were allowed to call yourself whatever you wanted as long as you weren't attempting fraud with it.
I remember a little while back that there's a class action lawsuit against Facebook about them using data incorrectly, like you've been going over. I was signed up for that, and I later found out that my profile picture is being used as a gay porn site.
Oh, the sponsored stories ads, you mean?
Yes.
Isn't that ridiculous? They just had to pay $20 million, I believe. Was it 20 or 200? I hope it was 200. But what he's talking about is that Facebook can and does use your images that you upload, anything you upload really, in ads that appear not only in the news feeds of other people on Facebook, but also in, like, the sidebar. So it might be like, you know, Sarah likes sushi at this place, and, like, I might not actually really like that sushi. I might have clicked it just to be nice. I might have forgotten that I clicked it. I might, you know, I might like things on Facebook that I don't want appearing next to me in an ad. And so Facebook basically got in trouble for this because they were doing this without people's knowledge and express consent. And at least in California, which has a really strong right of publicity law, you can't make money off somebody's image and not pay them for that. I mean, usually we hear about it with celebrities, but this was happening on a much smaller scale. So it's like your endorsement isn't worth as much as Eliza Dushku's endorsement, but many of those from many people like you do add up. So they got in trouble for that. But as of Friday, with their new update, they can do it again. So everybody should go into your Facebook settings and look for ads. So you go into settings, privacy settings, ads. Unclick the setting that lets you be used in sponsored stories. They don't ever want to call them ads. They call them sponsored stories. It's an ad. You're going to be in it. So you don't want that.
Did they reset it again if you already had it clicked?
I don't think they reset it if you already had it clicked, but the default is to opt you into everything. Their defaults are to have you share everything. It's slowly eroded over time.
Has there been any more litigation or results from, I heard something about Target having aggregate data on purchasing, linking it to people's accounts, and figuring out before, yeah, for example, the husband, that the woman is pregnant and buying prenatal vitamins, and then starting to send baby advertisements to the home, and then the husband gets the good news, or maybe not so good news, whatever it is.
It was the father in that case.
You know, the dad, or, you know, from the teenage daughter, but, like, has there been any litigation on that, and any rules about, hey, you guys need to knock this off?
Well, one of the problems with cases like that is proving harm. So in many cases, privacy harms are slow and steady and gradual. It's like the frog in the frying pan who doesn't realize he's getting cooked. So most of the lawsuits haven't been successful because the harm can't be proven. The case that you're talking about is where Target was able to tell that a girl was pregnant before her own family knew and started sending her ads of, like, congratulations on the pregnancy and here are all these products and diapers you might need. And her dad got the mail and was like, what the hell? My daughter's not pregnant, and called Target and yelled at them. And actually, she was like, actually, Dad, I've been meaning to tell you something. So basically, Target and advertisers know when you're pregnant before you know, or your dad knows.
Well, I think they did a similar college is big time for people coming out. It's not like people are very receptive if you are not straight. So different people would go on, have groups formed so that they can have a community together using Facebook's group thing. But Facebook would start showing advertisements and send updates to the family, even though that they bought the security.
Yeah.
So it's, surprise, your daughter's gay.
Yeah, and that happened too because of a group setting. Like, there was a gay chorus group at some university, and people joined it under the assumption that the privacy settings for that group were private. I mean, it said they were private. And then it displayed that kids were members of that group. And so their parents were on Facebook and saw that. In one case, like, two kids got kicked out of the house because Facebook outed them through, you know, shitty privacy settings. So it's... yeah, it's creating real problems for people.
That's a funny thing, but the only, Facebook is not the only problem there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I was just going to go back to Target for one second. They haven't, like, you know, reformed their ways because they were sued or anything like that, but they have changed their policy slightly. Instead of sending you, instead of sending the daughter just, you know, stuff about pregnancy and diapers and whatnot, they now send you a really big package of coupons, and they bury all the other stuff in there. So... they're still doing the same exact tracking, but they're just hiding themselves a little bit better.
Yeah.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah. So the lesson here is that if you want to correct their behavior, you have to hit them in their wallet, right? But with your dollars and that sort of stuff. And, you know, you can actually get companies to respond, but, you know, they're not the sort of creatures who really want to change their ways. So.
Right to the question of which company you gonna go with? Where are you gonna buy your supplies?
If we're going to hit them in the wallet, then we're going to have to decide as a group, which is going to be incredibly difficult because we're all free individuals, we got to go spend our money at a specific store. That store could easily become the next Walmart or Facebook or whatnot that's doing exactly what we don't want it to do. South Park did a very good episode about it when they burnt down a Walmart. Then they brought in a new, like, little country store. They brought it back up, got gigantic. They burnt that down again. They never learned their lesson. It's almost inevitable with the power corruption sort of deal. You can't really win. You're going to say, I'm going to put my money here. They're going to be big monsters, and now they're the evil guy we got to kill.
You can fight them, though, like... just, you know, you can do things like use aliases, you know, be smart, don't give them your real name, don't be afraid to lie, use trackers. I mean, you don't have to read privacy policies. No, like, I would not say that and believe that anyone would do it. But there are some shortcuts, like look for the terms third party or affiliates or data sharing, and just get to that section and see who they're selling you out to, and ignore the rest. But yeah, I mean, like, there's so much money going into finding out who you are and tracking you, and there's almost none going into privacy. I mean, like, we're one of four companies that actually looks at this stuff. But that's why you should support privacy organizations like the ACLU and the Electronic Frontier Foundation and Epic and all these guys. I mean, they're really doing great work to stand up for you guys and make this stuff come to light. Yeah.
You pretty much just addressed what I wanted to talk about. I feel like all of this great advice is me going into a bomb shelter, and I'm just going to hide for a while until hopefully the world gets better. Other than the things you just mentioned, are there other things that we can be doing to be more proactive in changing the world around us instead of just dealing with this shit?
Yeah, I mean, go protest, go join, you know, go on Reddit, join groups like Restore the Fourth, you know, sign up for the EFF's newsletter, donate to the ACLU, get a Guy Fawkes mask. You know, knock security cameras off the walls when you see them. Like, put stuff on your laptop that says that you support this stuff. Talk. You know, one of the biggest things that people can do is just talk to the people they know and explain why this stuff is a big deal, because most of this is invisible, and the companies want it to be invisible. They want you to be in this state of, like, great, look at all the wonderful free stuff that I get, and I give them nothing. You know, make that trade-off clear to the people that you know, because this stuff is intentionally hidden. And, you know, people often will say, why should I care about privacy? I have nothing to hide. And the fact is you act differently when you're being watched. If you know that you're being watched, you don't do the same things, you don't say the same things. You know, the way that you act at home when you're in your room by yourself is different than when you're at work, is different than when you're at Dragon Con. And the audience for those things changes you. So it's not really about what you have to hide, but what you have to live for and what you, you know, expressing yourself and going to things that you have, going to places where you have a right to be, like AA meetings or nerd conventions or any number of things, you know, that you might not want the world knowing, but you have the full right to do. So it's not, privacy isn't just for bad people. It's for anybody who cares about free expression. So go spread the word. Good.
Wanted to mention one more thing about the Target story, and what makes it really scary is that Target, in this case, they're not just tracking what their customers are buying at their stores. They were working with third-party companies to collect as much information as they could about about a customer.
Yeah.
So it's more than just, oh, she bought some vitamins, she must be pregnant. They're getting all kinds of data from all kinds of places, and there's no telling what the extent of that is.
It comes from things as far-reaching as your driver's license information, your voter file, your credit card use, down to what you're buying at Target specifically. It's a big mass of data that exists about you that you can't see, and that's a problem.
And one more thing on the you have nothing to hide, and this I got from like a video on why you shouldn't talk to the police. So nice. The response to that is, how do you know you have nothing to hide?
Yeah, who's making the decision about what's hide-worthy, you know? What's okay today might not be socially acceptable tomorrow, and you don't know. So it could come back to bite you.
The lines are fuzzy.
One question for me is, like, how does this apply to your library information?
Well, there's a Patriot Act provision that deals with your the books that you take out. So I think there's specific protections for that, but I don't know too much detail about that. I actually know more about video rentals. Like, I know that there's the Video Privacy Protection Act exists because of a specific incident that happened with a judge, Robert Bork, in the 80s. So your rental list is protected. So that still applies to Netflix today. But I don't know. I mean, I'm not really entirely sure, but what you read says a lot about you, so I hope that there's some good protections there.
So you had talked earlier about someone, I think you had mentioned people, you know, getting your data and using it falsely. A few months ago, my husband got a letter in the mail about loan counseling for a restaurant that he owned. We've never owned a restaurant.
Ooh.
And fortunately, it had the restaurant's name on it. So we actually did enough search and found the owner and called and said, we've got this letter. It looks very serious that you have apparently defaulted on a loan. Do you need this? But then it occurred to me, my husband's name, and this was a woman, by the way, who owned the restaurant. It wasn't even a man, but the first and last names were the same. So that piece of information is connected to my husband's name now. So when you have those disconnects because of shoddy tracking, how do you get that off your information? Because the only way we knew about it was a letter we got in the mail. How do you protect yourself when it's not you, it's someone else?
Well, there's two classes of data brokers. There's the ones that are more commercial, like Spokio, that are like kind of the Wild West. They're really unregulated. And then there are the ones that fall under the Fair Credit Reporting Act. And it's, if you're dealing with finances and loans, in theory, it should fall under that. So if it's a company, if the companies that are selling this information about your husband are under the Fair Credit Reporting Act, you have a right to correct. You have the right to see the information they have about you and update it so that it's accurate. And if they fail to do that, there are huge fines associated with it.
We have time for just one more question, so make it good. Anyone? Bueller? Oh, back there. Mike's coming.
I was late, so sorry if I covered it. I was searching for a neighbor's address, but couldn't find a sentence. And I came up with a site that listed everybody's voter registrations.
Yep.
Remember that right here?
Not specifically, but yes, that's all public record information.
No public connection to Democratic. I found that
campaign donations are also publicly available. So anything that you have given to anybody in the past is right there for anybody to find. That's the kind of stuff that makes up these really detailed profiles about you. You know, everything from government data to what you're doing on Facebook.
Yeah, I was told that a famous person that I work with on a regular basis had made an interesting campaign donation, and was his home address, which he tried to keep real secret, is now public information.
Yep.
And that was it. So, sorry, a follow-up? Go ahead.
Is there what?
Give them fake information, that's all. You know?
Yeah,
we talked about that earlier.
Fill out as many sketchy-looking sweepstakes and surveys with fake info as you can. Yeah.
All right, well, thank you all for coming, and enjoy the rest of the conference. Thanks.